Welcome to Fine is a Four-Letter Word, the podcast that empowers you to say, fuck being fine. Tired of being stuck in a place where you say everything's fine, when it's really not fine at all? You're not alone. I'm your host, Lori Seitz. I've been there too, and so have my guests. Here's a secret. All it takes is a conscious decision to change and then restructure beliefs so your actions take you in the right direction. That's where Fine is a Four-Letter Word comes in. Each week, you'll hear inspiring stories from people who have transformed their lives and businesses, and practical tips and takeaways to move you from spinning in place to forward action so you can create a life of joy. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get started.
Have you considered how much of what you do, even the things that seem to bring you joy, began as coping mechanisms to deal with trauma? Even your talents and your brilliance might be subconscious or even conscious reactions to traumatic experiences from your past. Gregory Halpin came from a family background of violence, addiction, and abuse. Yet one of the main core values he felt he was raised with was the importance of creativity, which he learned from his mother. That's just it, though. His mother had developed creativity as a coping mechanism for her own childhood trauma and passed it on to Gregory. For a while, creativity brought Gregory success and joy as a theater actor and singer, which in turn made him a storyteller, meaning he embraced the power to rewrite and create new stories. He was quite successful at it, but then he'd hit a wall. This became a pattern that affected Gregory for 2 decades. In 2007, he became a professional coach as a way to earn income so he could fund his performance art career until he made it big. This raised the question of whether someone in need of help themselves could help others. Still, on the surface, everything seemed fine. But fine is a four-letter word. Gregory's childhood trauma was sabotaging his personal relationships, his path toward success in all his endeavors, and more. Then he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2016. In a moment, when you meet Gregory, you'll join him on a journey through which he created his own safe space by taking responsibility for his own healing. One of the key realizations was discovering how a childhood lesson intended to help kids cope with the world actually exacerbates their traumas into adulthood. If, like Gregory, it hit you that some of the very things you think are fine are either symptoms or causes of what makes you not fine, the 5 Easy Ways to Start Living the Sabbatical Life Guide is for you. Once you read it, you'll discover a counterintuitive approach to making intentional changes in mindset and lifestyle. Learn how to own your feelings and your struggles so you can address them. And find out how to face fears, step out of your comfort zone, and rewire your beliefs. It's only 7 pages, so it won't take you long to get through. The 5 tactics are simple, but as Gregory will explain during our conversation, they could be the very thing that cracks something open in you and helps you see things differently. Are you ready to find out what that's all about? Well, when you're ready to say fuck being fine, then this guide is the place to start. It's time to blaze your own trail and allow your curiosity to take you on a new quest. Go to zenrabbit.com right now to download it for free. Now, let's go meet Gregory. He's holding a jar of peanut butter and has a mischievous grin on his face. What is he up to? Let's meet with him and find out. Welcome to Fine is a Four-Letter Word. My guest today is Gregory Halpin. Welcome to the show, Gregory.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
I am so interested to hear where this conversation is going to go, because when I'll just share with those who are listening, last week, Gregory and I attempted to record and the internet was just not having it. So we decided maybe there was some reason we weren't supposed to talk last week. And so that makes this conversation extra special because it's more destined.
Yes. Yes. We're amped up and we've got the anticipation happening and it feels like so ready.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just jump right into it then and get into that first question of what were the values and beliefs that you were raised with that contributed to you becoming who you did as a young adult and then into today?
Well, I can go the route of saying that just growing up in a family of trauma and all of that stuff, just, you know, it's not like an unusual circumstance. So many people have experienced stuff like that. But I will say, if I'm going to go the other route, I'm going to say the value of creativity is what was really instilled in me and passed down to me, especially from my mom. She was super creative. Just growing up in a very difficult family life that she had, not only that she had and my father had, but like as a family, our family, we also, you know, carried the same stuff. And so my mom used creativity to process a lot of trauma, to process a lot of difficult challenges. So I'm like, wow, that's, and I just that clicked in my head maybe 2 years ago. I finally got it. I'm like, wow, this creative part is all about coping skills. It's a coping skill.
That's really interesting that you figured that out. I want to jump back to something that you just said at the beginning about the trauma and that it's not unlike a lot of other families, which doesn't mean that it is not nothing. It is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to minimize what you went through just because, well, lots of people have been through that. And I think sometimes people think, well, it wasn't special. Like that's just how everybody had it. So, but to acknowledge that you had a situation and whether everybody else or a lot of people have it or not doesn't matter.
Yes, it doesn't matter. And I should have reframed it. I should have framed it differently. And like I said that because for a long time, I centered the trauma in an unconscious way and then a conscious way in terms of like just making it part of my storytelling and all of that. So sometimes I feel like, okay, so I really centered that a lot. So I'm just going to set it to the side a little bit and kind of like go not super positive side because I'm not like into ultra positivity. I'm not into that. I'm spiritual kind of thing, even though I am and we all are in some sense. So you're right. It does matter. It does matter. Everyone's lived experiences around trauma is important. Totally.
Yeah. You said it exactly as it was meant to be said. Like you said, maybe I should have framed it differently, but that's exactly as it was supposed to be for whoever's listening to hear that message. All right. So let's go on. So creativity, what did you do with that creativity?
So as a creative person during high school, like 11th grade, I was new at the school and I had a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, all of that stuff. And so new school, 11th grade, and they had these auditions for a musical called Anything Goes. And so I auditioned, got the lead. And so from then on, I started getting leads in all the shows and like all the speech competitions and whatever was going on, I got involved and I did well. And so, and plus each summer I got involved in a professional summer theater training program. And so that is how creativity first showed up for me, is that vehicle. And so I am an actor. I'm also a storyteller in that sense. And it's just interesting because I was just very I was very unconscious of all of this anxiety that I had and why didn't understand why my goals as an actor and singer just didn't, like, it would start out pretty good and make momentum. And then all of a sudden, like, I just hit a wall. And that would be like the repeated, the pattern over and over and over for like 2 decades. I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
Did you recognize that it was a pattern before you, like, how soon did you recognize it was a pattern? Because you said 2 decades. So was it like 2 decades you weren't really paying attention and then you realized, hey, this is a pattern? Or was it a pattern that you recognized earlier and you just couldn't figure out how to break?
It was a pattern that I couldn't recognize. I didn't know I was in it. And it's just interesting how when you're stuck in a trauma response, like this was such an ongoing trauma reaction to just everything. And so you don't know you're in it. You don't know you're like in that cycle. And then I don't know, through the journey of meeting people and investing in therapy and other modalities of healing, then it clicks finally. And you're like, okay, shit, that's what's been going on. So now how do I fix it, or how do I change it? And then I just spent like a great number of years just doing everything I could to get to the bottom of that. And like at the helm, I'm a coach, right? I'm a life coach, and I help gay men over 40 navigate midlife. But still, like, there's always been this part of me that just, the performer part, that's the strongest part of me. And that's something else I'm realizing even now, is like that always has taken precedence over everything else. And I just didn't listen to that. And yeah, so I'm just very excited to see how this all unfolds, because I'm in this new mindset, this new, like, unapologetic, just unstoppable force that just wants to see if I can do it, you know? Like, yeah. I want to make it on TV, and I'm doing things to make that happen. And I'm going to still be a coach too, like a gay men's coach. But I'm like, wow, I can do both.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We talked about you having part of the anxiety being related to you feeling like you have to prove yourself to people.
Yeah, it's most certainly a coping mechanism that I developed as a child during times of just, there's a lot of violence in the family, it's the 70s, there's latchkey kid kind of mentality, left to your own devices, you know, a lot of addiction. And so that was like my coping skill. I had to please people, you know, we had to please people. We had to like do really well. We had to be careful not to do something the wrong way or we would get punished. And so that just evolved into wanting to do that as an adult, you know, when, especially if we're dating somebody new and that we feel like this love is starting to grow, and then if we're letting that trauma response happen, then we're doing something to like please, we want to please them in a way that's unhealthy, where we are not honoring boundaries, where we're not, when we're getting too enmeshed in the emotions and not allowing space to just let that dating thing unfold and like blossom.
Yeah.
Like constantly interrupting it.
Mm. And do you think that part of that is like trying to manage the appearance in the relationship so that they'll like you? Because like you said earlier, when you were growing up, you had to be a certain way you thought you had to be a certain way for people to like you. And so when you're in that relationship, then you're not really showing up as who you are. So now the person is falling in love with somebody you're not.
Exactly. Exactly. Because like, I remember as a kid, like whenever I needed to cry, which was a lot, I would run to the bathroom and close the door and hide in a towel. Like, and I said to myself, like, nobody's going to see me cry ever, ever, ever. And that was like a pattern. That was like the start of concealing my the intimacy and the vulnerability. And it still shows. I'm dating somebody new and it's scary as hell. And I find myself wanting to hide, wanting to stay invisible. And I struggle with that a little bit, but what's different is I have better skills. I have better coping skills and I can navigate this better. And so I'm showing up in a way that's like, okay, I'm going to just take a chance and I'm going to say this. I'm going to do this while honoring their boundaries and while honoring the sacred space of something developing. And it's just interesting how those parts of you from childhood still show up and try to trip you up or try to like say, oh, I don't think so. You're going to freak out. You're going to like stew in your own head for hours and hours. But yeah, it's like, okay, you need to just chill for a minute.
Yes. Well, I'm reading this book called It's Not Your Money by Tasha Silver. The subtitle is How to Live Fully from Divine Abundance. And in it, she's got an entire chapter, maybe more than a chapter. I haven't gotten to the rest of the book yet, but on taking care of your inner child and nurturing it in a way that it wasn't nurtured when you actually were a child.
Yes. And it's funny that you mentioned inner child, because I was just at a cafe a little while ago working on a script for my solo show that I'm working on. And the part of it that I was working on was the inner child part, was the wounded inner child archetype. And it's just interesting how they show up. And I'm trying to activate this inner child as a way of the joy seeker, the little boy who will show up instead of the little boy who shows up scared all the time. This little boy who shows up and actually takes my hand and actually helps me and leads me to a place of like feeling more centered.
Wow. I'm like getting tears. I don't know why, because that just is such a strong, I can feel it so strongly. Mm. Yeah. And she talks too about allowing ourselves to cry when you were just talking about that and how important that is to allowing abundance, allowing prosperity, allowing and not just in monetary ways, you know, abundance as overall but we have to allow the tears to like cleanse ourselves.
Here
I sit like crying about your thing.
That.
But yeah, wow, that's so cool. And you had also mentioned when we talked previously that you were often told you were too sensitive.
Yes, all the time. I was told I was too sensitive, that I need to toughen up and be more of a man, be more, I mean, when you're a little boy, I mean, they even use that terminology. My folks even use that terminology. I'm like, I'm a little boy. I can't be a man.
Right.
But yeah, just toughen up. And like you said, like that concept of abundance doesn't always have to be about money. And so toughening up doesn't always have to be used with words. It can also be used with physical force, with hitting and the belt and stuff like that. Like that's also a way of making someone not sensitive.
Yeah. You know, I, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about a lot of the past guests I've had and conversations I've had with people, with clients. There are so many people who were subjected to physical abuse and trauma. It's not at all surprising that our world looks like what it looks like, because this is how the people who are adults now were raised. It's shocking to me because I didn't come from that background, but it's really, and it's up to, and then it becomes up to us as individuals. Like you have done a lot of work on yourself. And I wanted to point out too, because you mentioned that it took you many years to get to here, even after you realized the pattern. It wasn't like overnight, like, oh, there's the pattern. Oh, now I can fix it right away.
Yeah. Yeah, just that was just like the tip of the iceberg, and like figuring it out was just hard too. But I don't know, this internal thing happens that just keeps you going, I guess.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, this trauma manifests as physical conditions.
Yeah. Does
talk about what happened for you.
So physically, just like the physical part, like the outer part, I would say like that showed up in gaining a lot of weight. And for a very long time, I mean, I was, my weight fluctuated, yo-yoed all the time. But then after I got cancer in 2016, Hodgkin's lymphoma was that. And then after the chemotherapy, even during the chemotherapy, which was just the hardest thing I've ever had to do, it was just awful. And even during chemo, I started to cultivate my eating habits were not that great anyways. But so during the chemo, it just kind of flared up even more. And so I just started eating and eating and eating. And then after the chemo was finished, took like 5 years to heal from that. And during those 5 years, I just kept piling it on. And so I was a little bit obese in a way, like technically like 300 pounds.
Mm. Wow.
And then I let go of just part of the growth process is like a year later, or February 1st, this February, for past February 1st, marks a year of not having sugar and flour. I just let all of that go.
Wow.
And I lost 120 pounds.
In a year?
In a year, yeah. Well, the sugar and flour part, and it took me a year to do, or I didn't have it for, haven't had it for a year. But the weight part took several years to finally like get it and and just leave it off. And it's been good so far.
Yeah. Well, that's so now you're moving forward in such a more healthful way in every aspect.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And when you're, and then dating is like, it's interesting because when you're dating, it's like, oh shit, like all this shit's coming up again. And like I thought I had it all under control with the eating and like life is going to be perfect because I'm working on myself so hard and like I've been made progress, but you meet somebody and that just that just throws you off your game.
You can say what you were going to say. That just fucks you up.
That just fucks you up when you feel those emotions. It's like, and it's good. It's all good. And I invite the intimacy, but it's still like, shit, like, wow, this is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all right. It's still part of the process. Like there's never a point where we get to like, everything's good now. I don't have to do any more work. I don't have to feel anymore. I don't have to feel bad anymore. Like, you know, those, because again, it's just going to always be because we're human. Like, damn it. Why do we have to be human?
Yes. And I'm like, why have I been eating jars of peanut butter lately? And I think, okay, that's why. But there's no sugar in it. So that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, peanut butter could be good.
Yeah.
Someone told me it was inflammatory. And I said, I refuse to believe that. I just love it too much.
Mm. So good.
Yeah. What do you put it on?
Sometimes I just scoop it out of the jar because that's part of my inner child. Even like when I was 8 years old, I used to do that all the time. I'd sneak out in the middle of the night, everybody's asleep, and I would just get a big scoop of peanut butter and run back to my room and then just, you know, just eat it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. What you mentioned that you went to therapy to help you through this, and there was something that you had said about taking full responsibility for, like, obviously there's no responsibility to be had for what happened to you.
Right.
The responsibility is now as an adult to, what's the right word? Like, manage it or, like, take it from here to heal yourself.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that owning my own bullshit meant just the narcissism part of it. Like when we've experienced that kind of trauma, there is this thing called narcissistic injury where it's just part of that process. It's part of the trauma. Like we can't help, we've been traumatized so much that we made everything about survival and about ourselves. So when we go into the real world, that still plays a part. So it looks like narcissism. So there's that part of us that's still a little wounded where we center all of our problems all the time, where we center all the conversations and we make that about us. And so that is what it means for me to own my own BS, is to like, okay, I've got to not center my shit all the time. And I've got to allow other people into the conversation and make space for them too, instead of monopolizing everything.
Okay. I've heard people talk about narcissistic behavior in relation to relationships that they've been in, but I haven't heard that term before. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
Sort of like a fracture in your, it's like a personality thing. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't have that kind of injury, but there's still elements of narcissism that plays a part in my story. So
I could see how that would come to be. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You had an interesting statement, because I wrote it down, of what does it take to crack something open in you to see things differently? Like, what?
That's a good question. It is, because it's so like, I don't know, like when I think about that, so I don't think some... Lately, I've been thinking about it in terms of it being many different things happening, like a series of things happening. And the biggest thing that happened was the cancer. That's just a big nutcracker of them all. It's yeah. like it, that's when it just, that's when it happened. So, but there was a series of other life challenges, that happened that started to make me question a lot of things that I've been doing.
A lot of people who have been diagnosed with cancer say that it was actually a good thing in the end, not in the moment, but
yeah,
in the...
yeah. Yeah, they say that. And I kind of fight against, I struggle with that because I don't, it's like, I get it. It's like, we want to see things as there's good in things and we can see the positive side of things. But sometimes I feel that just, it minimizes it. I mean, there's no way to put a spin on cancer in terms of it being like a gift or something that is a good thing. And I guess maybe we can like say that the we can grow from it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can grow mm-hmm. from the okay. experience, I yeah. guess. I don't know. I'm on the fence.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious what your take on it was, because it seems like a lot of growth did come from it. And then yes. when you look at that growth, you could say, oh, well, that's a positive thing
yes.
that happened, that you've become who you've become because of that.
Yes, I guess it's just during the whole event
sure.
that you hear people say, stay positive, chin up, oof. This, that. And that's just what, like, and I didn't realize how impactful that was in terms of, like, and I get it. People mm-hmm. are uncomfortable with this, with cancer. People are uncomfortable with shit, so they're going to do that. That's their coping skill.
Yeah.
While at the same time, it's just like, okay, if you hear that all the time, then you begin to question, like, is this really a bad thing? Is this really painful? Is it really making me nauseous? Am I making a big deal out of this?
Right. Now, and especially in your case, going back to like, okay, am I really being too sensitive about this? Like,
yes.
it triggers that pain again of being told that you're too sensitive. And wow, you're starting to question your own experience.
Yeah, like I didn't, like no one made space. And that sounds selfish, but in that sense, I felt like, okay, I need people to open up space for me now because yeah. I need this space because this is fucking crazy right now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, let me be in the pain, in the frustration, in the whatever feelings that you're feeling, not always just like, well, look on the bright side.
Yes. And I think there's a family part of that, too, that just opened my eyes up to family and what I thought my family was and then what it ended up not being. So it was like a bubble pop. Mm. You know, it was like there was major awakening around how family was really there and I think that's when I finally realized that I need to stop blaming other people, even though other people can contribute to bullshit. There's also a part that I realized, like, wow, I also contribute too, and I can either blame them or I can either keep whining about it, or I can just create my boundaries and I can let certain people go and I can just move on mm-hmm. instead of focusing on what was me all the time in terms of crap family does.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Are you still in touch with them, or did you just like remove yourself completely?
The one person I am for the most part, but I removed myself completely. Just couldn't, you know, there was just too many behaviors that they kept doing. And I just like, I had to like say, yeah, I can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, but then, and I'm better for it. And I think after my mom passed last year and the family thing, that's when I started to really take off. Like all of that family bullshit just suddenly left my head. And like, now I'm doing all this stuff. And it was amazing, actually.
Yeah, it's like a burden was lifted, and now you yeah. could fly.
Exactly. Like, those voices are still there, but, like, their influences are not so much. So, yeah.
Interesting that it took her physically leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that to open up for you.
Yeah, because that in itself, like, brought up a whole another set of, you know, reactions and trauma responses and stuff. Yeah, so it was pretty interesting, actually. I miss her, and it wasn't like her glad that she was gone, but right. it was just it made me just realize, like, just my place in the family and how it wasn't really what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because I think unless you've been through the death of your mother, it's hard to understand what it's like. Like, you just can't relate. It's like, I don't have mm-hmm. any children. I can't relate to what it's like to have that kind of bond, but I know it from as the child and as the mother. Like, it's just like this yeah. club that you can't know about until it happens, mm-hmm. until you're joining. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But where was I going with this? Right. Because after my mom passed, and it's been almost 10 years, that's when I really started evaluating the whole, do I want to live the next 20 years the same way I lived the last 20? And that's where this whole fine is a four-letter word or fine, fuck being fine came from, was because everything had been fine. It wasn't terrible, but fine wasn't enough anymore.
Mm-hmm. It was just sort of like, yeah, I totally get that. Sometimes fine isn't enough. Sometimes we're not fine, but yeah. we say we are, you know, we say,
right.
Well, everything's great. Everything's great.
Going back to the way that people interacted with you when you were going through chemo, and it's almost like they wanted you to say you were fine so that they could feel okay.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Sort of like having to like muffle my discomfort so I could, yeah, make them more comfortable and make them take care of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation about yeah. wanting to make sure everybody else was okay or yeah. feeling comfortable at your own expense.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, like I said, that's when I just realized, wow, like I also contribute to it, even though other people, like I said, other people can be maybe the center of it or also give more or whatever, but it doesn't matter. It's like, wow, this really helped me look at like how self-centered I could be mm-hmm. and how I didn't want to be that way, especially as a performer or as a coach. Like, I can't do that. I can't let self-centeredness be the center.
right. Yeah, and there's a difference between self-centeredness and selfishness in taking care of yourself.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Having strong boundaries and having being able to reinforce them and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. How did you get into coaching? Was it like once you got through, and I don't want to say you're not through, nobody's through working on themselves, but once you yeah. got to a point where you felt comfortable now with who you are, is that when you turned around and said, all right, now I can help others?
No, I'm done healing. I've done it all. I have healed, and I have healed as far as I could heal. No.
Excellent. We right? need to put that out and give you an award.
As all of us need a reward.
Yes.
You know, you just
have some peanut butter. Time.
Yes. Where's my peanut butter? Can you ask the question again since I derailed it?
Yeah, so at what point did you decide that you were going to go into coaching others?
2007 is when I first, you know, it was something that I heard about and it's like, oh, that's interesting. So I took a course, I trained and I don't know. I was born from this idea of wanting to work for myself. And I think if I was going to be a coach, then I could fund my performance art career, because you have to find some sort of thing to do while you're trying to make it, because it's not, you know. And so I think that's how that started.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yeah, and then it just evolved from there.
So you started coaching others before you were to a point, I don't want to say where you were healed, but that wasn't, from what you said, and I'm trying to piece together the timeline, you hadn't really even started working on yourself yet.
No, just a little. I think that's kind of when it started, like in the 90s, in the mid-90s. I had a friend who we were really close, and she was going to school to get her degree, her master's degree in music therapy, and she was into therapy. She was like my age, and she was doing all this healing work, and I was like, what's going on here? Why am I like this young, same age, and I'm like fucked up? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's when it first started, because that implanted the idea of therapy in my head.
Okay.
And it took a long time to get there, but that's kind of when it first happened. But in 2007, when I started to train as a coach, I was definitely in deep in my own trauma mm-hmm. and stuff. And yeah, it was like I started coaching and I less like I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't coach people like in this place. But it's just an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, they say a lot of whoever they are, a lot of therapists
they
become therapists because they're working through their own stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it's true. I mean, I think we're always working through it. Even as a performer in the solo show that I'm creating, I'm like doing this, I'm writing this. It's autobiographical. And I find myself still processing stuff that's coming up. And then I'm like, okay, I'm doing this. We give these shallow reasons, like I'm a performer, I love it, I've been doing it since I was a kid. But no, we're doing it because we're still processing shit. I want to do it to enlighten other people, but at the same time, it's also for me too. It's something that I'm still working out.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about your show, and it just occurred to me that I had two, the first time I ever did a show with two guests, and it was McCall and Alexandra Clayton and McCall Sinnott. I don't know, Sinnott. That might be a good introduction for you. Y'all are in that world, so I can put you together. See, that's one of the things I just do. I am a connector. But I'm going to ask you the question first about the song, the hype song. So when you need an extra boost of energy, what's the song you listen to?
A boost of energy. I mean, there are many. I think we all have many. But
yes.
I don't know. One that I keep going back to is, it's a ballad. It's a romantic ballad from the 80s. And it's when it happened during a first kiss with a boy in my eighth grade class. You know, he asked me, we hung out. I was new at the school. We hung out and... it was just so, how it happened was just so pure and, coming of age kind of thing. And, Suddenly by Billy Ocean,
okay,
which is a slow, yep, like very yep. like meaty, hearty song was playing while it was happening. So when I hear that song, it fills me up with joy, but it also fills me up with like this anxiety from that nervousness of what was happening and everything else. So, but it fills me up in a way that just makes me feel like, wow, I'm so happy to be where I am today. It just to be reminded of that and to take that first kiss with a boy and normalize it. And
yeah,
we all have a first kiss, mm-hmm. and who doesn't matter who you are and what gender you are.
Right, right. Oh, that's so cool. I love that explanation. Thank you. Mm-hmm. If people want to continue a conversation with you, where's the best place for them to find you?
They can find me, gregoryhalpin.com, and they can find me on Instagram most of the time too, Gregory Halpin.
Okay. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. And then I would be remiss if I did not ask you about when you think your one-man show will be available for public consumption.
Well, I've been doing readings of it, so it's coming soon. April, I'm doing a produced reading of it online. It'll be a virtual reading, part of a series, and you can go to gregoryhalpin.com and there'll be more information there, or my Facebook page too, Gregory Halpin.
Or maybe by the time this publishes, we can put that in the show notes as well. A link
yes,
to it.
Yes, I will. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Okay.
Yep.
Great, because I want to see it or hear it
awesome.
Or whatever.
You'll see it. You'll definitely see it. It'll be like it'll be on Zoom or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yes, I want that in my
oh,
calendar.
Oh yes! Yay! I love your energy there. I would feel your energy there. It would be awesome.
Gregory, thank you so much for joining me today on Fine is a Four-Letter Word.
Thank you. This has been such a fantastic conversation.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the first time I tried to record with Gregory, the internet went down and we had to reschedule. Due to my team's amazing editing skills, you probably had no idea that the second recording, the one you just listened to, originally had a 9-minute gap because Gregory's phone died and he had to plug the charger in and call me back. Was this the universe challenging us in some way? Let's get into a few of my top takeaways. Number one, young children are told by their elders to grow up and act like adults, especially boys, who are told that men don't cry. Just toughen up, be a man. This begs the question, how can a kid be an adult when they're just a kid? I remember Kathy Spass back in episode 54 also sharing how she was told she was too sensitive as a kid. Gregory's story of hiding in the bathroom and crying into a towel so nobody could hear him speaks volumes about how adults avoid their own feelings by demanding children suppress theirs. Number two, this carries over into adulthood and takes the form of saying it's fine because other people expect you to say it so they feel okay. When Gregory was going through cancer and treatment, he was told to stay positive and chin up. While going through a life-threatening illness, really? Because other people are uncomfortable about the idea of getting cancer themselves, they expect those who have cancer to put up a brave front and suppress their feelings and emotions while in their presence. How does this contribute to healing? Number three, it also affects dating and romantic relationships. How often do you find yourself trying to be someone you're not? Or impressing your partners by suppressing yourself to foster harmony, air quotes, and compatibility, air quotes again. In the end, your partner will fall in love with the person you pretend to be, not the person you really are. This is why so many relationships fail and leave both people feeling like they never really knew the other person at all. Number four, at the beginning of the episode, it seemed like Gregory was minimizing the physical abuse, violence, and emotional trauma he grew up with, simply because many people go through the same thing. It's not at all surprising that our world looks like what it looks like, because this is how the people who are adults now were raised. And number five, all this said, you have the potential as well as the power to create your own safe spaces. This includes recognizing patterns, how what may seem fine could be what makes things not fine, along with gaining the strength and skills to create your boundaries and uphold your standards. It's okay to cry. If it wasn't, why is it part of our emotional range? Many therapists enter the profession because they have their own stuff to work through. In a way, they're using their careers as their safe space. You can create the safe space you need on your own terms. Thanks for listening to Fine is a Four-Letter Word. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow and share it with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform to help others discover it too. You can find links to my socials on my website, zenrabbit.com. And before you go, take a moment to reflect on what you're grateful for today. Remember, you have the power to create a life you love, and I'm proud of you. Thanks for joining me. Take care.